The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler, right back with you here on the George Show, 710 KNUS, halfway through before we turn it over to Chuck Kirk at the 10 o'clock hour. Now, listen, I could continue to tell stories about the cheating that took place in school and sort of the response to it from teachers and others. I, like Billy, I have my own story in which I myself, you can't really call it cheating. It's not really cheating, but it was definitely credibility impacting honor kind of impacting moment. But I also want to talk about this Tyre Nichols case. It's the news of the day. It took place, of course, the release of the video after we went off the air on Thursday, and even after I think Caldera went off the air on Friday. So there wasn't a lot of time. I did make some comment about this on KDVR a couple times on Friday, but there's a lot to talk about and unpack with this. But, Billy, I feel like I don't want to cheat you out of the ability to tell your cheating story. And, of course, I have my own. It's not cheating, but it's like that.
First of all, again, we'll apologize to my mom as I'm telling the story. It's going to be not a huge disappointment, a tiny disappointment. Love you, Mom. As a child in elementary school and part of middle school, I was really, really, really bad at spelling. Mm. I flipped letters. I didn't. I just was no good at all. Yet, despite my obvious frailties with the spelling words correctly, the teachers insisted on having weekly vocabulary quizzes. Now, I knew the definitions of the words. I just couldn't spell the stupid words. And thus, my English score was suffering a little bit based on those damn vocabulary quizzes. So I developed a technique. My technique, and you talked about just earlier in the last hour, you talked about, you know, the little small writing on the 3x5 card. No, sir. You can get caught with a 3x5 card. But what you have to have at every possible test is a pen to write with.
Yeah.
So I realized that the clear Bic pens will act like a magnifier. So if you write really tiny and I could write the vocabulary words on a piece of paper, I could then slide it inside of the Bic pen.
Genius.
And if you line it up perfectly, it then will magnify the word. So the handful of words I didn't know how to spell were in my pen every week. And suddenly my vocabulary score really improved. And it was fantastic. And again, I know that I was cheating.
That is
I know
cheating.
I wasn't spelling it properly.
Smart
but again,
cheating.
Today we have spell check on every computer. And it's much more important I know what the words mean. Then I know how to spell them because the computer will fix it for me. So again, it's a complete rationalization. And I know that and I accept it. But that's my big cheating story. That's what I did. And I did it. I mean,
how old were you? 30 what?
I think that served me well from, I want to say, third grade through at least sixth. I can remember doing it at least through sixth grade. So yeah. It was a number of years.
It was a nice system. One of the texters has texted in, Bill is a genius. G-E-N-I-O-U-S.
That's what I would do. I remember in fourth grade, it was funny because I brought home this thing that I wrote and the teacher was saying, oh, you should go share this with your mother. And I'm like, yay, I did. And I brought it home. Now I must have been third grade. And the funny thing is it was this great thing about, you know, mom helping me and telling me what to do and giving me advice. Except instead of mother, M-O-T-H-E-R, for whatever reason, I put an extra U in there. So it was the mouther. So the idea that you're talking about your mom doing all those great things, but she is the mouther. Yeah, they're like, it's kind of, and so they thought, the teacher thought that mom would get a huge kick out of it, and she did. She laughed and laughed and laughed, and ever since then, I did spell mother correctly, but it was that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I was awful. I couldn't spell for nothing. Yeah.
I love that story, by the way. That's genius. The Bic thing, where was that when I was in school? I wish I'd have thought of that. Mine was a little different, and it goes way back. We're going back 40 years, folks. I was in 7th or 8th grade. I can no longer remember which. And I'm going to go ahead and say the teacher's name. I don't know if she's still with us or not. If she is, she's probably not listening to the show, but it was Miss Everett at Carmody Junior High. And there was a thing that she had every student do, and that was when you read a book or a chapter or whatever, at the end of the week, you had to have mom or dad's signature on the forum that said, I attest that my son or daughter read this chapter or this book. And it was just the kind of thing that you had to do, you know, every Friday. Well, you know, I'm 12 or 13 at the time. And of course, I forget sometimes. And so many times I did have my dad sign it or my mom sign it, but you forget a couple times. And by the way, there was no mercy. It was like, hey, if you didn't get it turned in and it wasn't signed on Friday, then you don't get credit for it. And so one day I was like panicked and we're standing outside of her language arts class. And I turned to my good buddy who interestingly, folks, is the same teacher who caught the math cheater. This is one of my best buddies. And I turned to him and he was brilliant at forgery. Brilliant. I mean, this guy could have led a life of crime. He chose, of course, math. Nonetheless, I would take my little form to him and I'd be like, dude, I totally forgot to get my dad to sign the thing. And he would sit down and carve out a brilliant signature that was definitely passable for my father's. And he did this maybe once or twice, let's say twice. So one day we're in class on Friday and the class always begins with like 10 minutes of reading time or whatever. And so I'm sitting there and I'm reading and I get called up to the podium and Miss Everett's there and she's very, very proper lady, sits very straight. Do you know what I'm talking about? And hair is always just so. And she says to me, hey, I've got this letter for your parents and I'd like you to take it to them and I want you to have it signed and returned on Monday. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't know what it's about. I don't hear the train coming down the tracks, you know. So I'm like, oh, well, what's it about? She's like, she takes the letter out of the envelope and she has two copied pages of these things. She goes, I believe you have been forging your parents' signature on these rings. And instantly I'm dropping things out of my body into my pants. I mean, they're just, it's a free fall, right? But whatever I ate earlier that morning.
Technically, though, it wasn't you.
Well, so here's the thing. Here's the best part of the story. We're not
there's
even there.
There. Yeah.
So she pulls out these two sheets and she says, George, these two signatures were not signed by the same person. And I look at them and I'm like, oh my God, she's pulled out two that my dad actually signed. Like they were two my dad actually signed.
Oh, that's great.
And I look up at her and I'm trying to suppress a smile and I go, no, my dad really signed those. And she looks at me and gets that look. She's like, no, he didn't. She said, those were not signed by the same person. And I say to her, Miss Everett, you're making a mistake. And she's like,
yeah,
no, you made the mistake.
No
now
way.
You go sit. So I take this letter home. It's all I could do to keep from like just kind of giddy skipping home because I'm like, this is ridiculous. I tell my friend, I'm like, dude, look at this. I got busted for the forgery thing. And he's like, oh, my God. Like, are you going to die? I'm like, take a look. And he looks at the signatures. He goes, I didn't sign those. I'm like, I know. My dad actually signed them. So I take them home. I show them to my mom. Now, of course, when I tell my mom, hey, Miss Everett thinks that I forged dad's signature, my mom's instantly going for the spatula, right? Like what she calls the cake turner, because someone's going to get a beating and it's going to be me. And I go, wait, but look. And she looks at him and she recognizes my dad's signatures too. And she's like,
oh, that's great.
Your dad signed both those. I know, Mom. I know. I'm a victim here.
I'm so victimized.
And so Mom waits for Dad to come home and says, are these your... He's like, yeah, I signed those. Yeah, George brought me the form. I signed them. And I just look at her with these eyes like, I don't know where this is coming from.
That's
I so think she
me.
Hates me.
That's so mean to me.
And so my mom, who is an incredible writer, she first off, she's like the chief investigator for the Office for Civil Rights out of HHS in Denver. She's also... at the time, in her first or second year of law school, in her 40s, right, with kids. And she cranks out a letter on the old typewriter, right? This is before cranks out a letter that it's on fire. I mean, there's like smoke coming off of it. And she is so, and again, mercifully, Mom passed away in 98, so she can't hear this story and think, what did you make me do? So she writes this letter. It's scathing. I mean, it is just like, how dare you, blah, blah, blah. These were both, and they have no idea that Miss Everett caught me, but not the right way.
Yeah, not
you know?
The right way.
Not,
yeah.
She's just failed. And so I'm like skipping to school, like do, 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 do. I mean, it's very much like Peter and the Wolf music in the background. And I go take it in to Miss Everett. She's like, do you have the letter? And I'm like, I do. I'm like, there it is.
Yes, both
my parents signed it. And she's like, oh, great. So we had the little quiet time to do the reading at the beginning of class. I can't read anything. Instead, I'm just staring at her as she opens the envelope. She pulls out the letter and begins reading it. And the reaction on her face, I see the pupils dilate. I see the blood leave her face as she's just, I'm sure, horrified that this is actually what happened.
Oh, God.
And I can't. I can't take my eyes away. It's like watching somebody fall off a bridge or something.
Yeah, in slow motion.
In slow motion. And then finally she puts the letter in the envelope and then turns to look at me. And I'm just like, I don't even know if I have a book on the desk, but I'm staring down like I'm looking at something. And it was one of the most wonderful moments. And yet I'm guilty. There's no doubt. It's like being accused of a crime that you committed a week before you were accused of doing. Like, I didn't steal that TV. Yeah. I stole the other TV. It's very much like that.
I didn't murder that guy.
No, no. But it became legendary for two reasons. One, that it happened. And that out of all the forged signatures, she happened to find two needles in a haystack that were my dad's actual signatures. And then for my buddy, who became a legend, his forgeries were so good she believed they were the originals.
Oh my God.
Just lived on through.
Best marketing ever.
Oh my gosh. The number of times he signed documents that the parents should have signed were just amazing. Anyway,
I got to tell you that's funny you make that about the signatures, because again, I'm not always the best rule follower, and that's kind of one of the things that has gotten me in trouble. And so this is as a parent. My kids would bring home their work, and you had to sign off on the edge of the notebook or whatever it was at the end to say that you've seen it. Yeah, I signed them. It just wasn't my name. So I just had this theory that the teachers are just looking for a signature.
They don't care.
No, so my kids had, President Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, Bruce Wayne, Lex Luthor, Shrek. All those people signed my kids' papers. Yes. And I, all the time, Batman. I mean, I had no shame. I just would sit
and
here.
Nobody and nobody ever reached out to say, hey.
No. And
buddy,
this is through three different kids and several different teachers, multiple teachers.
Nobody
said a thing.
It may be that a recent visitor to the Citadel Museum in Amman, Jordan, had the name Richard M. Nixon. That may have happened.
Yeah, so that's I did. I mean, whatever I could think of, I just signed that day. And it was never my name and never had anybody question a thing at all.
I love the story. I hope teachers are out there listening. Here's a texter. My then fifth grade son wrote a paper on our sheepdog, Rudy, about how sweet and loving he was. He computer typed the paper using spell check, and at the end of the semester, we got all his papers back, and a great note was written on the top commenting on the choice of word used to describe how gentle he was. The word was genital.
Yes. That is fantastic.
And of course, spell check isn't going to catch that, because genital was
spelled
correctly. And who doesn't love a genital dog?
I know. It's every time you meet them the first time.
Oh, my gosh. They hop up on you and rub their gentleness all over you.
All over.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Smith of the gentleness. Yes.
Yeah. Now, listen, and of course, there's some other texts here, the life lessons about people not, learning that actions or that conduct have consequences. I agree with that. Had a text from a buddy of mine who's a teacher who says, look, I just build it into the syllabus. And if you cheat, you get the zero. I don't even meet with the parents. I just send them the syllabus. It's like, please see here with a little arrow. That's plenty good. Listen, I could continue the cheating stories all morning because they're real. I don't recall ever cheating on a quiz or a test. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. The forgery thing was different. And one other thing, my buddy, who will remain nameless, who had the gift with the pen, the gift with the forgery, who's now a high school math teacher who crushes the cheaters, he had that superpower. For me, the superpower, which is in the same zip code as that, was my voice. The voice that you hear right now, even though I'm still recovering from this, whatever this thing was, this Andromeda strain, I've had about this voice since I was 14 years old. Now, what that means is back in the day, when you're talking in the 80s, when kids were going to be excused from school, a parent would call in and leave a message on the voicemail and the attendance thing that says, hey, so that was me. So there would be, I'm going to make up someone who I'm using his actual name. Let's call him Roger Noonan. And Roger and me and some other guys would be wanting to cut class or something like that. Sometimes I wasn't even involved. They'd be like, hey, I need you to excuse me from fifth period. And I would pick up the phone and call into the Bear Creek attendance line. And I would say, hello, this is Steve Noonan, whatever Roger's dad's name was. This is Steve Noonan. And I wanted to let you know that Roger's not going to make it back from lunch. He's got a dental appointment. Well, he could be back for seventh period. You've got to make it sound like it could be back for seventh. But honestly, if we don't get done with this thing until I'll probably just bring him home. If you have any questions, of course, give us a call. And I'd even leave his number, the house number. Nobody ever called. Nobody ever follows up on any of those things. That was so the you had these two guys that are defeating the parental system here with the schools. And this is back way before there was any Chat GPT or Apple Watches or cell phones. This was just straight up old school mischief, you know, by teenagers. It concerns me that I've shared all those stories with my kids because I don't see any of them that way. I don't look at any one of my kids and think, you could go down that same dark road that I did. They are all such good, sweet kids, which I presume is the overwhelming influence of their mother. But I have that in the background. And some of the other things, stories I can never tell you on the radio, by the way, because even though the statute has run, just it's so damning. I couldn't possibly tell you some of these stories. But I do think to myself, and I wonder, what there but for the grace of God, go out, what happens if I had been caught, right? Like, what happens if I had been busted? Where would my life be now? And I'm talking about things like, hypothetically, trespassing the school at night. I don't know that that happened. I'm saying that's a hypothetical that could be part of it. Had I ever been busted, like, where would I be today if I had been sucked somehow into the juvenile system? Or even if back in the 80s, they would have done that. Maybe the cops just would have, you know, taken me home or something and let my parents beat me to death. But it just, man, I don't know how we got on this, but now I'm thinking about all these things where I could just do a podcast on crap I did in high school. I mean, that could be its own podcast, and Billy, you'd have to be a frequent guest on there, and we could bring in all sorts of people to tell about the horrific things they did, and now they're in positions of prominence and respect. Maybe that's a word out there. Maybe it's a word of wisdom on how to treat kids who get in trouble. Right now, honestly, way too many kids get sucked into the system for stuff that back in the day would be treated differently, but that's a different story. Listen, when we come back from this, I promise you, we've got some texts that are in here. When we come back, I'm going to start to get into this Tyre Nichols case. It is horrific on a lot of levels, but I got questions, and I hope you have some thoughts on this thing as well, too. It's an unusual thing, and when I say unusual, for some out there, they're like, this is what's going on every single day in America. That's nonsense. I don't believe that, but I do believe there's something going on here, and the question is, what should we do about it? How do we address this? So you stick around, and we're going to talk about Tyre Nichols when we come back. It's George Brockler on The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS. Little Red Hot Chili Peppers right here on 710 KNUS. George Brockler on The George Show with you. You would have to have been a hostage somewhere or trapped in a dark, dark hole, maybe under something heavy, to have missed the coverage of the five Memphis police officers who beat to death Tyre Nichols earlier this month. Now, it was on January the 7th that they conducted a traffic stop, they say, for something that was reckless driving. And then by the end of the conflict there that took place, I don't know how else to describe it, contact seems too light. By the end of it, Tyre Nichols gets taken to the hospital, and he's in the hospital in critical condition for 3 days before he dies. Now, the efforts by the police department to get on top of this quickly are unprecedented, in my opinion. Not only did they fire all five of the officers, we'll talk more about them in a moment, but they quickly moved to release the body camera and other video footage that they had from that night to the public. Now, I have thoughts on that, too, some concerns, some questions. But those videos were released on Friday after the show. And I have since gone and watched. There's four videos that I'm aware of that were released. There is one from an officer. He appears to be a white officer from the initial contact. We'll talk about that in a second. There are two from officers who were engaged with Tyre Nichols when they finally caught back up to him. And then there was one video that appeared to be from like a house or a pole camera. I presume it was like a house because it's actually being manipulated and maneuvered to catch from a distance the contact with the officers and Tyre Nichols. And I want to talk to you about those things. This is the kind of case that is very, very difficult to watch for anyone. It's also very difficult to watch if you're a person who is, like I am, very much a back-the-blue kind of person. I've spent my career really in law enforcement at the other end of the spectrum, and that is the courtroom spectrum, both as a deputy district attorney and ultimately as the elected district attorney. And I'm a big supporter of law enforcement. I don't think they get a fair shake much of the time, less so today than they did even 20 years ago. But I also recognize that there are officers out there who break the law and who offend. I think we counted up 34 or 35 law enforcement officers that we prosecuted while I was district attorney for various things. But this thing right here, the fact that it becomes national news is not a surprise. We'll talk about what the national response is, but it's not a surprise. But when it is, and you see these kinds of videos with the kind of sound there, and I'm interested to know if someone has a different take on this, but it's so damaging to the brand, and it's so damaging to the career field. And coming off of the heels of George Floyd just a couple years ago, and if you're here in Colorado, we're still dealing with the aftermath of Elijah McClain. Now, by the way, I think that case is going to turn out very, very differently than the George Floyd and the what I think is going to happen to these five officers who have since been charged with second-degree murder. I think the Elijah McClain case is a lot more convoluted and a lot more complicated. It's not to say that the contact that Aurora had with Elijah McClain on that street that one night years ago wasn't problematic or handled improperly. I'm not suggesting that. But to have laid upon them the cause of death really is very difficult when you look at the evidence as it existed at the time, the evidence even as it is now, the fact that the judge has made the decision to split up the trial of these five people, three officers and two paramedics, into three separate trials. It's going to be a difficult case. I think the DA at the time, a guy named Dave Young out of Aurora, made the decision early on that, hey, there just wasn't enough information to move forward. And that was true, given what the medical examiner had said, which is, I can't tell you why this kid died. I can't tell you. I don't know. That feels a lot like reasonable doubt. But then that was in an environment before we released the body camera video. Well, we are not there anymore. And especially since Senate Bill 217, which was our post-George Floyd, post-Elijah McClain bill that created personal liability for police officers and sheriff's deputies and ultimately, although not originally, state troopers. It's different. We now have a law that says, hey, body cam has to be released except under these certain circumstances. And I want to tell you, from the role of a prosecutor, I'm conflicted here because I know that I have to try this case. If I think I have bad officers, and that's exactly what the Shelby County District Attorney thinks here. I got bad cops. I got five cops who participated in the knowing killing of another person. That's second degree murder under Tennessee law. That carries a potential sentence of 15 to 60 years in prison. Well, these guys are all pretty young, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but that's the end of their lives, right? Like, you get 4 to 6 decades in prison, and you're in your 30s, you're not leaving prison. We're not paroling 90-year-olds, right? They leave feet first. So big-time sentences available in this case. But if you're a prosecutor and you determine early on, as this guy has done, I'm going to hold these dudes accountable. I should tell you, by the way, the Shelby County District Attorney is a district attorney who defeated the incumbent and ran on pretty much one of those woke lefty platform things. So that's not to say this isn't a righteous prosecution. It's to say that this person may be motivated at a different level to be quick on the trigger. I don't know. But they move quickly. But as the prosecutor, you know that you have to pick a fair jury. You also know that there are rules of professional conduct. You can also call them ethics rules that say that you cannot poison the well of potential future jurors by burning a guy down in the public eye before he has his day in trial. In fact, you're not even supposed to make what they call extrajudicial, that means outside the courtroom, statements on a pending case because of the worry for that. Now, that applies to both sides, but it really applies more to prosecutors. And the U.S. Attorney's Office, by the way, sucks at this more than anybody else. After they go get a grand jury indictment, they will show up and they will do a huge press conference, and it will have all the drugs and the guns and they'll put all this stuff up before the public to take pictures of it. I don't think that's right. But then what they do is they give the case away through the back door, and then their mum's the word on what happened. DAs at the local level are different. DAs don't make the same kind of announcement at the front end of an indictment or an information, and they tend to hold close all the evidence that they have for good reason, because they don't want to run afoul of the ethics rules and they want to be able to pick a fair jury. So if you go back to the Aurora Theater case, you'll remember all that massive coverage that took place, none of it involved law enforcement. You did not see the DA, either my predecessor or me, giving press conferences or talking about this or releasing video. You did none of it. In fact, we vigorously resisted every effort to try to get the information. Well, here, in this case, with these five officers who are accused of killing Tyree Nichols, the chief of police made the decision to release the body cam pretty quickly. Now, I know the motivation there, and I appreciate it. And that is, one, we want transparency. Law enforcement has gotten punched and kicked and beaten and bruised, some of it for good reason, in the public lately. And if we're going to maintain the trust of the community that we serve, we have to be as transparent with them as possible. So we're going to provide all this information to the public so that they can evaluate it and they know what we're doing. In fact, it's, in my opinion, why the chief quickly fired all five of these officers, was to say we are taking action. Do you remember that the officers were all part of an organization called Street Crimes Operation to Restore Peace in Our Neighborhoods, which conveniently spells out Scorpion. Just as an aside, folks, law enforcement and government in general have a moronic commitment to trying to turn everything into a damn word. We even do it here in Colorado. We have a group called Raven, some of the best police officers in the region that you can find that do incredible work, but they're just determined to be part of an organization that has a name associated with it so they can then have a logo and they can then have a challenge coin and a patch. It's just, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And so here's this one called Scorpion. Street Crimes Operation to Restore Peace in Our Neighborhoods. And I imagine people hugged it out when they figured out that spelled out Scorpion, or used Scorpion to come up with those words. Nonetheless, that group, that special new anti-violence unit, that has been permanently disbanded as a result of this. Very quick action by law enforcement. But the concern you have if you're the district attorney is these guys are going to at some point then say, Judge, we cannot get a fair trial here. We can't get a fair trial because they put out in front of the public without our ability to comment or explain or otherwise these pretty damning videos. I'm not telling you there's a good explanation. I'm saying this is their argument. And the worry is going to be by the time this thing goes to trial, and I presume it will go to trial, that every juror that could come out of Shelby County will know this case intimately. It's kind of like what happened with George Floyd. Everybody remembers Derek Chauvin kneeling on that man's neck. Everybody remembers that. That's a real problem, especially if you're trying to make sure that these guys get a fair trial. Now, if your goal is, hey, we saw they did it, we've already convicted them, let's just get them into court so we can run them through the system and have them sentenced, then you don't care. But if your thought is, and every prosecutor should have this thought, I want to hold this guy accountable, but it's got to be through due process. They're entitled to a fair trial with a jury that hasn't been exposed to the evidence. If that's true, then the release of these videos, you have to view as, damn, man, I get it. I get the whole police interaction with the community and the trial. I get all that stuff. But this is now going to make it harder to successfully prosecute these guys, to successfully and fairly prosecute these guys. Now, in the past, when we had things like this happen in Aurora, let's say, chief of police would call me up and say it was either going to be Dan or Nick Metz. And they would say, hey, I want to release this video because it shows what really happened. My cops didn't do anything wrong, blah, 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 blah. And I would say, pretty please don't do it. And I would tell them exactly what I told you. They knew it was coming. Please don't make it harder on me. And understand that there's a rule out there that says that I'm on the hook for the release of information by every other law enforcement agency, even though I don't have the power to tell them not to do it. So I would beg Nick, or I'd beg Dan, please don't release this stuff. And if you remember when Dan Oates was in here in the studio, back when he first came on as the interim chief before he retired, he talked about how difficult it was and how pissed off he was that I had asked him to do that. And my predecessor did too, to not release information about the heroism that his officers engaged in during the Aurora Theater massacre. But nonetheless, he relented to the advice. So did Nick. But in the interim, Nick would say, Chief Metz would say, hey, can we meet with at least the family and their attorneys and show them the video? And I thought about that long and hard. And I thought, we can't keep them from commenting on it in the public. We lose control of that piece of it. But yes, especially parents. If the parents, the spouses of the person who was beaten or shot, died, we ought to at least pay them that respect. and go through and show them the process and all this other stuff. And that worked out. In fact, you know, Omar Montgomery, who's the head of the NAACP for Aurora chapter, fantastic guy at leading that group, by the way, he would be part of those things too. And in almost every single one, at least the ones I can remember, we'd come out of that and there'd be questions. They'd all have questions. But at the end of the day, it would de-escalate the situation quite a bit. And even Omar would say, I think this sucks. I wish these guys hadn't done this or that, but I understand what happened. So here we are with all this video that's available for the Tyre Nichols case. And if you haven't seen it, just because it's part of the national conversation right now, and it could lead to some national legislation, which I think is well-intentioned, but it is wrong. And I'll tell you why as we get there. There's a video, and there's four of them that are available that I've seen. And I described them to you. Now, the first part of this is they contact Tyre Nichols in their car, they being this Scorpion unit. And they're all decked out in their tactical gear. It's all black and, you know, all this other stuff. They look like door kickers. And there's an attempt to get this guy. He gets pulled over. He's talking to them. And they go kinetic right away. They go hands-on with him, trying to pull him out of the car right away and get him on the ground. And they're screaming at him. I mean, it's pandemonium. Guy's able to get up and run away. Well, one of the officers who we have body cam for discharges his taser. A taser usually has two prongs with long cables that attach to a battery that will shoot a whole bunch of voltage through your body, causing you to convulse, drop to the ground, and never want it to happen ever again. And so he discharges his taser. He swears in the video that one of the prongs hits this guy. One prong is as good as zero prongs because you need to have the current connected between the two. That's how you get the little zzz. That's how you get that. And so he discharges it. And what's important about the video is not that this guy gets away, although it's amazing he gets away from three cops. I don't know how he does it. But you can get a sense of what him running away does to these officers and what's on their mind and what they're talking about with each other. This is a clip from a portion of that video. If you watch it, it's during the time that this guy's out of breath. These dudes must be in the worst shape of any officers ever because they're all breathing like they've been working in a mine shaft filled with smoke for 8 hours. And this guy's wrapping up his little deployed taser cords around his thing. And one of the things he's heard saying on his video as they're describing the fact that other officers think they have located Tyre Nichols in another part of the neighborhood, this is what this officer says.
I hope they stomp his ass. I hope they stomp his ass. Smith is calling for other cars because him and Martin are chasing him.
Him and Martin are chasing him, and I hope they stomp his ass. That is not good evidence, folks. Now, this is not a guy who participated in the actual death, or what led to the death of this guy. Now, I've even had some texters text in and say, why wasn't this guy charged with second-degree murder? Because he didn't engage in that behavior. You may question whether or not discharging the taser was appropriate at the time. Given what I saw and what I heard, it was. This dude's trying to run away from the cops. They're trying to subdue him. This didn't seem out of the ordinary to me, but that's just based on the information I have. But this guy's state of mind and how he's describing things to others that are... And nobody objects. Nobody says, hey, man, we shouldn't stomp his ass. It's all part of this adrenaline-driven thing that these officers are going through. Now, I got more clips to play here about what took place, but I want to tell you, of these, one of the great weaknesses, I think, in this unit and what took place that night is these are five officers who have, in my opinion, negligible experience. Negligible. Like less than 5 years of experience, and they are cut loose to be part of this high-impact superkinetic unit where they're using all their special gear and their special tactics and just... They are missing someone with some experience there. What they're missing is like a sergeant or a lieutenant who rides, and a lieutenant wouldn't normally ride with them, but rides with them and has immediate oversight over the decisions that they're making. And I'm talking about someone who's got 10 plus years of experience on the street. That's not what they had here. They had five officers, many of whom had been part of a class of like 2018 of police officers. That's only 4 or 5 years. That's not enough experience. They needed some veteran out there to be giving them better guidance and better commands, but they didn't. Now, we're going to talk about some more of the dynamics of this, including who these officers are, but we're going to get through some of this other video here. And the ultimate question for you is, and by the way, everybody on the planet has responded to this thing. I mean, our own governor weighed in with a proclamation about this,
And I wonder why. And it's not because this wasn't tragic. It's not because it wasn't a crime. But is this the kind of thing that requires a governor of a state that is nowhere near Tennessee to chime in with some kind of proclamation? He's not alone. It feels incredibly political to me. It feels incredibly like I'm going to run for president someday. I better come out on this national case. We'll talk more about that, too. Look, stick around. We'll get to all this stuff, including if you've got thoughts on this and what took place. I've got a bunch of texters, folks, who don't all agree with my description here. You can join them, but you can do it on the phone at 303-696-1971. Before we cut away, though, everybody out there is talking about regenerative medicine. That's real. I've heard that. Listen, I want to continue to be in my 30s, but it turns out the calendar says I'm a little bit older than that. And so I do some online research on things. And there's a way for you to get real, lasting relief without drugs or surgery. Now, it's not the first group that I've heard do this. I've heard other people talk about this procedure. But when you think about using your own genes, when you think about all the different innovative therapies that are out there, you got to start thinking about QC Kinetics. They are the nation's leader in a treatment that uses highly concentrated healing agents that they get from you, from your own body. So you don't have to worry about the rejection piece, to restore and repair damaged joint tissue. And that's becoming an increasing issue as we get up there in age. I can't tell you how many. My dad's had both knees replaced, the whole thing. If you're interested in that kind of pain relief without having to have the massive surgeries and the recovery time and the slings and the rehab and all this other stuff, QC Kinetics is the place to go. Now, I'm going to hook up with these folks here, I think, tomorrow to learn even more about the fascinating process that they go through, but also whether or not it could be used for me. Now, there's an easy way to get a hold of them, and that's to just pick up the phone. Free consultation, costs you nothing. All you get to be is smarter. 303-900-8986. 303-900-8986. And these QC Kinetics professionals, man, they got it going on. They'll answer all your questions, no high pressure stuff. If it's a good match for you and it sounds like it could be, you hook up with these folks, you're going to thank me. These are the kinds of people that make the quality of life that you're going through right now better. And they're doing it not through the old scalpel, knife, and stabby way. They're doing it through the innovative way that uses your own cells to benefit you. Give them a call, 303-900-8986. 303-900-8986. When we come back, more of you, me, Tyree Nichols, and the officers that were involved. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here at 710 KNUS, number 303-696-1971, talking about Tyree Nichols and what took place. Some texters asking questions. Someone saying it always starts with resisting arrest. I do think resisting arrest leads to an escalation of force, but there are a lot of folks that resist that don't get the kind of beating that this guy got. Another question: what drives someone who's supposed to be a good person, a cop, to do something this evil? I can understand maybe one overreaction as you're trying to restrain someone, but continuing also with 5-on-1. Very wrong. And also, how does it take five guys to restrain this guy? Now, something that I don't have the clip for, but it's in there, is at the end of this, when Tyree is slumped against the car and he's sliding down, a couple things I noticed, and I didn't get the sound clips for this, in part because the amount of profanity these cops use, that's just part of their normal lexicon, is ridiculous. It would have just been Billy beeping through the entire thing. But these officers are saying he's got to be on something. Dude's got to be on something. He's so strong, got to be on something. Other guys that are there at the scene, and again, I don't see this in the video, but I am not breaking it down frame by frame, so it could be real. But a lot of the officers, two of them were saying, he went for my gun. He had his hand on, one cop says, he had his hand on my gun. That's a big deal. When someone tries to disarm a police officer in the performance of their duties, that gives you a lot of license to do everything possible to stop that person because they pose a real imminent threat to your life and the lives of others. So that's different. And he says, hey, guy had his hand on my gun, tried to take my gun. I haven't seen that in the video, but maybe there's a still out there of it. The other thing I noticed was at one point when Tyree Nichols is, and I don't know that these cops know that he's mortally wounded. I don't know that they know he's dying. But he's laying on the ground. He's writhing in pain. And one cop leans over him. He goes, There's nowhere to go, man. You got nowhere to go. Where are you going? You got no, and I'm like, why are you talking to him at all? Like, what's the point? It felt almost taunting. Almost taunting. The other thing I noticed about the video is there's no doubt that this guy did not want to be in custody. No doubt in my mind. Both times. First time, he runs away from the cops. Second time, he's trying to run away from the cops. And he keeps trying to, like, get away, and then he de-escalates and says, okay. But one of the more traumatic things to hear on this, especially if you're a parent, is the engagement when they catch him the second time. And there's already three cops on him. I think there's three on them. And a fourth one shows up. And the beating is real, man. They are trying to get his arm. And you hear them repeatedly saying, give us your hands, give us your hands. So he must be resisting. But whatever they're doing to him causes this 29-year-old man to say this.
It's right again.
Hey, Mike, give me a hand, bro.
Mom!
Hey. Give me a hand. Give me.
Buddy, that's battlefield stuff, man. The only time you hear adult men yell out for their mom is when they think they're dying or they're in trouble. That just doesn't happen. I don't scream out from, short of a nightmare, I imagine, but I don't remember that. I would never scream out for my mom. But, you know, I heard that thing right there, and I flash back to that scene in Saving Private Ryan where Giovanni Ribisi, who is the unit medic, has been hit. He's been shot, remember, and he's bleeding out. And they're asking him, what do we do? What do we do to help you? And basically, there's nothing they can do to help him except to continue to use their little morphine stabbers to take the pain away. And he's like, mom. I mean, the same thing. It's just, it's so traumatic to hear a guy cry out like that. But it's not the only time that it happened.
Hey, watch out.
And that's a tough one. I can't imagine what it was like for Tyree Nichols' mother to sit through that and watch that. And again, that is, none of that is to say that these officers don't have some explanation that they want to give for this. But watching that video, and there's more to play. And we'll do that when we come back in the 9 o'clock hour. Tyree's mom, according to Billy, says she can't watch it and won't. I get that, man. I can't imagine having the last memories of your kid's life be him going through that kind of an ordeal. But we'll talk about it more. Lots of texts. Follow up with the phone call, 303-696-1971. Where do we go from here? What did you see? What did you hear? Is this as big a deal as it's being made out to be? Is it not being treated the way it should be? Give us a call and let us know at 303-696-1971. It's George Brockler on The George Show. We'll be back, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.